program comes from Bloomsterhus, filled with plants and herb starts for the spring. Open 10 to 5, Monday through Saturday. Bloomsterhus on Main Street, Facebook, and at 907-772-2566.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about.
Hello and welcome back to In the Garden. I'm your host, Daniel Rowan Tucker. Summer is turning now to fall, and I can't help feeling a bit sad for the passing of the long days and the warm weather. But there are hints of autumn color appearing here and there, tones of russet and gold in the grasses and tree leaves, and splashes of orange where the rhododendrons are shedding their old foliage. There's a certain wisdom that comes with the fall, the acceptance of what has grown and ripened in this year. Now is the time to bring in the harvest and store it away. Now we can look forward to the crackle of a wood fire and a season of rest and reflection before next year's explosion of spring growth and activity. Today I want to tell you about the psychological benefits of gardening, to share a deeper philosophy of cultivating our own peace of mind by cultivating a beautiful place. Surrounding yourself with green and growing things can be an important way to find relief from the stresses of everyday life in a digital age. When news feeds present us with more red flags than a matador provoking a bull, then we can benefit from seeing some green for a change. For thousands of years, people have found solace in their gardens, from the walled courtyards of ancient Persia, where orange and pomegranate trees lined pools of still water, to the cozy seclusion of an English cottage garden where honeysuckle and wisteria vines sprawl over brick walls and bumblebees buzz lazily in the sunshine. Beauty is hard to define because it may look different to different people, but I think everyone has a sense of beauty hidden somewhere. Think about the difference between seeing something written in a messy scrawl versus precise, flowing calligraphy. Our minds are constantly reading patterns in the world around us, even on a subconscious level. A few generations of life in an industrial society that surrounds us with products and machines has made most people illiterate to the language of plants, but they are still there in all their profusion, waiting for us to notice them. When we look at plants, we're presented with patterns of beauty and coherence written by eons of adaptation to life on Earth, painted in a vast range of greens and earth tones, and highlighted by the brighter accents of flowers, fruits, and autumn leaves. Plants are living things that are less different from us than we tend to think. They struggle or thrive, put everything they have into pushing forward the next generation, and then sink back into the ground, feeding the soil and everything else. Our ancestors evolved over millions of years, traversing forests, mountains, grasslands, swamps, rivers, and beaches, continually assessing the landscape for good things to eat, safe places to rest, and vantage points to see what's coming from afar. They knew plants intimately, not only by their appearance, but also taste, smell, texture, and even sound. As gardeners, we can come to know plants in this intimate way as well, and our world grows in depth when green things are no longer just a backdrop, but part of the action themselves. When we have planted and weeded, dug and pruned and harvested, we develop an intuitive sense of what and who those plants are. Plants all have their own kinds of character, whether strong or weak, bold or shy, soft to the touch or prickly and rough. Certain plants for me have become like old friends that make me feel at home. I can remember as a young boy playing under shady groves of red alder trees in the hills of western Oregon, in cool places along streams and ponds. Their smooth, pale bark invites the touch, and their abundance in the landscape invites harvest and experimentation. I remember hacking down a little alder tree with a machete when I was 8 or 9 and being surprised to see the bright red-orange color inside the bark, like the flesh and blood of an animal. But in cutting down this pole sapling from a dense thicket of such trees, I discovered the generosity of the alder, the tree that makes cords of wood in every unmowed gravel driveway or decommissioned logging road from here to Northern California. I have carved countless bowls and spoons from its soft pink wood in the years since then, tasted salmon flavored with its sweet smoke, and warmed myself over its hot coals. The alder is a plain-looking tree, no bright flowers or showy display of fall color. I've hacked and weeded as many alder seedlings out of my gardens as anyone else, and I'm sure I will weed out many more in the future. But walking through the light green shade of an alder grove always feels like a time machine back to my boyhood in Oregon, and just knowing that uncountable billions of alders are out there growing and spreading their seeds gives me faith that the storehouse of nature is being replenished all the time. Whenever there's an alder grove somewhere in the neighborhood, then I feel at home. I firmly believe that our gardens should be reflections of who we are. When someone tells me that they really don't like a certain plant, I take it as a positive sign of clarity about what their garden should be. That's one less plant to worry about. There is always more to learn in gardening, and new information to take in that can help us cultivate our land more intelligently. But it's even more important to make space for your intuitive sense of what you want your garden to be. It should be your garden, not somebody else's. The soul of the gardener is ultimately what makes a place a garden, as opposed to just a landscaped area located near a house. This is something you can't learn from books or magazines or YouTube videos. It's a creative process, a back-and-forth conversation between you and the plants and the land and the seasons, and it changes over time. What you wanted from your garden 10 years ago may be different from what you want from it today, and in another 10 years it may be different again, and that's fine. I'm going to share a story with you about what it means to be a gardener, in my experience. In 2014, I acquired 5 acres on San Juan Island and began clearing brush and young Douglas fir trees to create a homestead with visions of fruit and nut orchards and gardens of perennial vegetables dancing in my head, much inspired by places like the nearby Bullocks Brothers homestead on Orcas Island, which has been a mecca for permaculture followers for decades. Over the next 7 years, with help from my wife and other family and friends, we made our own little slice of paradise on that rocky, south-facing hillside, an imperfect work in progress that was perfectly ours and felt completely like home. I loved that land. I identified with it because I intended to spend the rest of my life there, and so I wanted to know everything about that place. I saw endless possibilities in it. Through continual trial and error, and long hours of observation, and simply living in the space, I developed spaces that could be called outdoor rooms, arranged to create a gradient of intimacy, ranging from the wide-open parking area out by the road, through a gate into a production-oriented vegetable and nursery garden, and then through another gate into the little dooryard garden of choice flowers, vines, and exotic plants nestled around a little grassy lawn spread out like a picnic blanket in front of our outdoor kitchen. It felt like the perfect balance of seclusion and sunshine. But times change, and the place around us changed, and we made the difficult but intuitive decision to sell the land with that beautiful garden, born out of 7 years' blood, sweat, and toil, and head for greener pastures and wider horizons up north in Alaska. Last summer, we went back to the old place on San Juan Island while visiting some friends in the neighborhood. And although part of me was gratified to see that many of the trees and shrubs I had planted were doing well, thriving even without being watered or given other care in the years since, there was also a deep feeling of sadness. The new owners are kind people who appreciate the goals of permaculture, but they live elsewhere and have busy lives, and the property is a side project for them. A hireling with a weed whacker had inadvertently decimated a number of rare plants that I had collected from specialist nurseries and even propagated myself from seed while we lived there. Those plants were still small and vulnerable and easily mistaken for weeds along a hedge where they were growing. It made me really sad to see that. On one level, I know that it's not my property anymore and that I must ultimately release the new owners to do whatever they want with it. But the place felt like a ghost town in a strange way, and it made me realize that a garden without a gardener is no longer truly a garden. Care, attention, and intention is what ultimately makes a garden. One of the oldest stories of our culture describes how Adam and Eve were given a beautiful paradise to live in, and through their human weakness, they disobeyed God and were cast out as a punishment, fated to scratch out a living forevermore, farming in arid lands with much difficulty. This story has always seemed oppressive to me. I think what it actually shows us is not that we are always fated to destroy nature, but that the belief in an external authority that wants to punish us for knowing too much is still at the core of Western beliefs. And the illusion that we are separate from nature pervades modern culture and results in dysfunction and disease at every level. Every gardener knows in their soul that we are truly a part of nature. We cannot exist separately from the earth, which sustains us. When I left my garden, I was not cast out. I made the decision to leave because I knew that I could create another garden somewhere else, an even more beautiful garden, with more water and better soil, and more knowledge that I have gained in the meantime. This planet is our Eden, and we are still the gardeners. So it's up to us to decide if we want to live in a wasteland or a paradise. I hope you want to be a gardener, too. That's all for today. Thank you for listening to In the Garden on KFSK.
Support for this program comes from Bloomsterhouse, filled with plants and herb starts for the spring. Open 10 to 5 Monday through Saturday. Bloomsterhouse on Main Street, Facebook, and at 907-772-2566.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a pig. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure, but it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice.
peppers. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What will life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Now if I was to change this life I lead, well, I'd be Johnny Tomato Seed. Cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden would be much better. And I could be pushing up homegrown tomatoes.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What will life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What will life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Send a call.